guess what? We don't have to do a count to align timing. Look at this. We can still do it though. 1, 2, 3,
4,
5,
6,
7,
8,
9,
and 10.
I think that's going to line up better than ever. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 259 of the Fun with Cars Formula One podcast. I'm Robin Warner, and today I'm joined by the man some call Christopher Roche. Hey, Chris. How are you?
Hello, Robin. That is my name. You're right.
Yeah. I just feel like it's a year-end thing. Let's just be genuine and just enjoy each other's company for a minute, or at least I will enjoy yours.
And I'll enjoy the drinking, so...
as many do, when they're around me. Today, we are going to talk about the Brazilian and Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, which were the 19th and 20th rounds of the championship, Formula One Championship, and the last two rounds of the 2019 calendar year. And it is Monday evening, December 16th, and here are the results of the Grand Prix. And we'll start with Brazil, and wouldn't you know it, it was Max Verstappen in the head Red Bull Racing Honda. He was followed by Pierre Gasly in the Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda. Third place went to Carlos Sainz in the McLaren Renault, and that happened after a little bit of back and forth. He was not on the podium on Sunday, but he did get third place result. Fourth place was Kimi Raikkonen in Alfa Romeo, lead Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari. Fifth place was his teammate Antonio Giovinazzi. Sixth place went to Daniel Ricciardo in the Renault. Seventh place, Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes. Eighth place, Lando Norris in the McLaren Renault. Ninth place, Sergio Perez in the Racing Point Mercedes. Tenth place, Daniel Kvyat in the second Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda. 11th place, Kevin Magnussen, Haas Ferrari. 12th place, George Russell in the Williams Mercedes. 13th place, Romain Grosjean in the other Haas Ferrari. 14th place, Alexander Albon in the Red Bull Racing Honda. 15th place went to Nico Hülkenberg in the Renault. 16th place, Robert Kubica in the second Williams. And the rest of the folks did not officially classify. That was Sebastian Vettel in the Ferrari, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari, and Lance Stroll in the Racing Point, and Valtteri Bottas in the Mercedes. That was Brazil. In Abu Dhabi, it was Lewis Hamilton who won the race in the Mercedes, followed by Max Verstappen in the Red Bull Racing Honda. Charles Leclerc was third in the lead Ferrari. Fourth place, Valtteri Bottas in the second Mercedes. Fifth place, Sebastian Vettel in the second Ferrari. Sixth place, Alexander Albon in the second Red Bull Racing Honda. Seventh place, Sergio Perez in the Racing Point Mercedes. Eighth place, Lando Norris in the McLaren Renault. Ninth place, Danny Kvyat in the Toro Rosso Honda. Tenth place, Carlos Sainz in the McLaren. 11th place, Daniel Ricciardo, followed by his teammate, Nico Hülkenberg, who is done at Renault officially and maybe done in Formula One. 13th place went to Kimi Raikkonen in the Alfa Romeo. 14th, Kevin Magnussen in the Haas Ferrari, followed by his teammate, Romain Grosjean. 15th, 16th was Antonio Giovinazzi, also in Alfa Romeo. 17th place, George Russell in the Williams. 18th place, Pierre Gasly, Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda. 19th, Robert Kubica in the Williams. And 20th place, Lance Stroll, who did not finish. Now, this is an excellent time to point out that Chris and I are in a bar. We're in a bar, and we are using one lonely microphone between the two of us because Chris and I are having a drink to celebrate the end of the season. Chris, cheers.
Cheers, mate.
All right.
Here's to Lewis, six-time world champion, eh?
Yeah, I learned that from a masking taped flag that I saw in the U.S.
Roaming Austin, yeah.
So, Chris, what say you about these final two races?
Well, Brazil was a slightly chaotic ending. Max probably dominated the weekend in the good pole, good win. But behind him, it was anarchy. I mean, we had the Ferraris take each other out. We had Albon in second place until Lewis took him out. And then, as you said, there was even the podium had the wrong people on it. And who would have bet Would you have bet a bottle of gin that Gasly would have got a second place in Brazil?
I should have bet a bottle of gin. I know that much. I know that the bet was correct. It was just where I placed it was incorrect.
There you go. So, Lewis and Mercedes gave it everything to try and take the win, and they came up short. They made some mistakes with their strategy, no doubt. But it was entertaining.
So, I don't care about any of what you just said. I just want to say that I'm really just truly in love with the notes you have in front of you.
Oh, good.
I absolutely love it. I hear the papers crinkling around on your microphone when we're doing this, but to physically see them and see it, although... It is slightly disappointing that it is a metal bound binder that you just rip the paper from. You don't take the time to carefully take those away. That part is decisively non engineered, but the rest of this I absolutely love.
Yeah, I mean, as the listeners will know, Brazil was a long time ago, and my age, you need a few notes to remember who finished 14th. So So what did you make from the race?
I was impressed with Verstappen's performance. I was impressed with how he managed tires versus pit stops. I found it fascinating, Lewis's performance. It seemed a little bit uneven. Bottas, correct me, I'm trying to remember, was it Brazil or Abu Dhabi where Bottas started from the pit lane?
Well, he started from the pit lane in Abu Dhabi because he had an engine failure in Brazil.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But where did he start in Brazil?
He qualified fifth.
Okay. All right. So it was a normal starting position for him.
Yeah.
But it was the engine failure. Okay.
Right.
So I thought that Bottas's performance was a little bit lackluster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
But to me, considering that... the weight of all the championships were gone. It was nice to just have a good old-fashioned race with normal amounts of consequences. And in those conditions, to see the Ferraris run into each other in just absolutely spectacular fashion. I think Brazil, just generally speaking, produces great racing that's entertaining to watch. And, you know, coming out of Sector 3, which is effectively a big, long straightaway, even though you're going through a few corners and uphill. And then Turn 1 is reasonably slow corner, so it's good braking zone, good passing opportunity. And I believe that's where Max Verstappen and... Was it Daniel Kvyat or who?
No, it was
last year.
Ocon.
Ocon, yes. Where Max and Ocon collided with each other in spectacular fashion. Spectacular in terms of results, not that there were pieces flying anywhere, everywhere. But anyway.
So it's interesting because I thought your favorite moment would have been the drag race between Lewis and the Mercedes and Gasly and the Honda-powered STR, that Lewis and Mercedes lost. Was that not a highlight for you?
I am not the Honda fan you make me out to be, sir, in those terms. I am but an unbiased journalist that likes to point out that Honda is going to have a good engine one day or sooner or later. In truthful terms, though, all joking aside, because we all know that Hondas are great.
Lawnmowers?
I own a Honda lawnmower.
Personal jets?
Actually. The jets, ironically, and I'm not sure, I think they're too small. You know, a Honda Jet, I think, only seats six, maybe eight. It's pretty
perfect
tight in there.
Honda executive team, then, flying around the world. Yeah.
So anyway, the realistic term, I mean, it's not like they were even Steven for drag levels and things like that.
Right, but, So, I mean, Brazil, there's some elevation there, right? And Mercedes seem to really struggle. And altitude. So as soon as the air gets a little thin, their motor seems to produce less power than everybody else's, which is a little bit strange. I'm not quite sure I fully understand the reasons for that. But they struggle similarly in Mexico, for instance.
Yeah. And Mexico is definitely the highest elevation. They are 7,500 feet, which is gosh, off the top of my head, that would be, it's not a kilometer. No, it's several kilometers because it's about a mile and a half. So it's approaching 3 kilometers above sea level.
Right. And then, so I think Sao Paulo is the second highest altitude track on the calendar, I believe. I may be wrong, but it's certainly up there. And so, and yeah, for sure, Mercedes seem to be running more drag than some other teams, although I don't know how much more than STR. But it was fascinating. I mean, in the hybrid era, we haven't seen a Mercedes outgunned in a straight line very often, but this season we've seen it a lot. I mean, Ferrari have been doing it, but I wasn't expecting Honda to do it in the same year, honestly. But a lot of it, a lot of the horsepower, I was reading Ferrari's power apparently is being attributed to the fuels that they run. And I think both Mobil for Red Bull and Shell for Ferrari have been developing some pretty interesting fuels that have been actually providing a lot of the power bump for those two engines. So maybe
so there's a claimed higher energy density.
I'm not entirely sure exactly what they're doing to the chemistry, but they're certainly providing the overall powertrain with more power.
Yeah. So what did you make of... I mean, to me, this was the moment of the race just because there's been building fireworks coming all season, and this was such an obvious and inevitable crescendo to have Leclerc and Vettel hit each other. It was the move itself. It wasn't spectacular. It was just one
just a
guy.
Touch, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just a touch, but it was enough to take them both out of the race.
Well, it was
a couple laps
fault,
time.
Wasn't it? I mean, totally Vettel's fault. He just started to push Leclerc to the inside of the track as they came towards the left-hand turn, and Leclerc held his ground, and so they contacted. I mean, totally Vettel's fault. 100%. Would you see it differently?
I mean, as much as I could argue, it would be 90-10 Vettel's fault versus Leclerc, you know. But effectively, it seemed like he was trying to push Leclerc over, and, you know, maybe Leclerc could have been a little bit more proactive about it or something like that. But, God, I mean, it was... There's so many examples of what not to do with your teammate, and they just seem to be hitting every single one. And more, this is a couple weeks after Abu Dhabi, and we're talking about Brazil, but more and more people are talking about Vettel's career. Now, not Vettel's career at Ferrari, Vettel's career full stop.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Hamilton's been linked to the Ferrari seat in 21 quite heavily.
More and more.
Yeah. I don't know if he's really going to go, but what it does highlight is Ferrari certainly don't seem to think, or people don't seem to think, that Vettel's the right man for that job alongside Leclerc, which is a concern for him. Because where would he go if he left Ferrari? I can't see too many teams wanting to pay him what he's being paid there. I don't see a seat at Red Bull or Mercedes for Vettel, quite frankly. But, I mean, it's the interesting thing about Ferrari's performance was they were going so well at Monza, at Spa. I mean, of course, high-speed tracks, the reward high power, and low downforce strategies. But their season fell off a cliff edge, didn't it? I mean, it was a Red Bull-Mercedes finale at Brazil and at Abu Dhabi. Ferrari didn't really feature in either race. So they've got some serious problems still. I mean, it's been a rough season for them. Really rough.
Well, I think it's not even so much that it's a rough season, but it's a rough season relative to the car's performance. Whereas, had they been making calls, let's just, for a moment, ignoring all the other complicating logistics and details, let's just say Christian Horner was in charge of Ferrari, not Red Bull. I think Ferrari could have been capable of world championship this year in terms of pure car performance.
Well, one of the BBC correspondents did an analysis that if you gave Ferrari everything that they could have achieved this year, then they would have been in the shout of the championship in, you know, towards the last couple of races. But you literally have to give them everything. They have to actually, you know. So Leclerc needed to not have the DNF early on in Bahrain, so on and so forth. But I don't know. Horner's an interesting character. Have you been watching the Netflix show about Formula One? He is a real stirrer. His relationship with how do you say his name? Arbitoil, the French, the Renault team leader.
Yeah.
Cyril. Let's call him Cyril. It's easier to pronounce.
Like
my goodness, they wind each other up. I mean, I was kind of shocked how much Horner was like sticking the knife in when he made the announcement to leave Renault and go to Honda.
It's fascinating about that. Sorry to interject, but Cyril's also quite young. They're both. I think Cyril's in his 40s, but I believe Cyril's even a little younger than Christian, who's in his mid-40s now.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, that type of approach works well in, it might be effective in a British-based Formula One team, but I don't think it would work so well in Ferrari, in Italy. So maybe he's not the right guy to lead Ferrari. But, Binotto seems like an intelligent chap. He's not been there that long, is he? So you got to give him a bit more time to get...
Go ahead.
I'll take another Guinness, actually. Yes.
Yeah, another gin. Thank you.
But proof
that we're at a bar.
But for sure, it, you're right. The season started to... I mean, from pre-season being favourites to not, awful Australia, not converting in Bahrain, and it just sort of went from there, didn't it? And then their two drivers fighting each other, colliding. It's not been good. And if they want to win next year, they're going to have to clean all that mess up.
And Leclerc has been the young guy and the one not making the mistakes. So it's been just this real precipitous fall from grace that Vettel's had. I mean, don't forget that when Vettel first came to Ferrari, it was like, well, is he going to surpass Schumacher's records? That was the talk, And he has since won, obviously, zero championships. Clearly, Mercedes has been strong, but he very much saw himself in the likes of Michael Schumacher, and he's very much proven not to be that way, or, at the very least, Ferrari as a team is not capable of delivering that anymore.
Well, I think the slide started a few seasons ago, right, when Ferrari occasionally had a competitive car and Vettel couldn't string together a consistent championship challenge despite having, a clearly defined number two driver. And so, last year he made a number of big mistakes to make it easier for Lewis to convert to his fifth championship. And now this year we've sort of had him exposed with a faster teammate. I mean, to move into a team... even if you're an experienced driver and be more competitive than the established driver is challenging. So what Leclerc's done is very impressive. A lot of people are giving Verstappen, driver of the season. But I think Leclerc, he made some mistakes. He made some mistakes in Baku, for example, in qualifying. And there were more than just that. But he is an incredible driver. I mean, he just a fabulous season. And raw pace was off the charts, quite frankly. So... yeah, I mean, Vettel had his hands full and then kept making silly mistakes. Canada being one, and then, what was it, Germany? No.
Germany's where he had a bit of a resurgence.
Monza.
Monza was
the nadir.
That was a bad one.
Season, yeah.
That was a bad one. Yeah. So, anything else to say about Brazil specifically?
No.
Check your notes.
No, I think I'm good.
Okay, Abu Dhabi, final race of the year.
I do have one more. So Red Bull set a world record pit stop, 1.82 seconds in Brazil. That
is it 82? 1.9 showed up on them. Okay.
Incredible. Thank you very much.
We're recording a podcast right now. Do you have anything to say?
Not at the moment.
Okay.
I'll be back.
All right. Moving on to Abu Dhabi, things were a little bit more typical per Mercedes standards. Lewis Hamilton winning the race seemed to be really in reasonable control of it. Most Grand Prix, there were a couple of little scares here and there in terms of pit stop strategy and who was wearing down their tires, how quickly, things like that. But Bottas, he had to, just as you say, he started from the pit lane and was able to convert that into a fourth place finish, which is quite good considering the circumstances. Something that I think Bottas can go into his winter break with his head held high that he had a much stronger season than 2018 and that his final race was good performance considering where he started. But it seemed like this last race really did encapsulate what a lot of people are predicting to be the future, which is Lewis versus Max Verstappen.
Well, Lewis did a hat trick in this race. So, pole, win, fastest lap, led all the race, all the laps of the race. So, pretty dominant final race of the year from Lewis Hamilton. And it, at a track he's always gone well at, and at a track Mercedes has always seemed to excel at as well. But yeah, I mean, it is becoming the Max and Lewis show with Leclerc making a, you know, guest appearance from time to time. And maybe, and I think a lot of people are hoping that's what we'll have next season, right? Those three battling it out for the championship. I mean, Max was not really in the race, to be honest. It wasn't like Brazil where Lewis was keeping him honest. Max was clearly struggling for ultimate performance, but was, you know, comfortably ahead of the Ferraris and was never really threatened by anybody else. I mean, it was interesting race from the fact that we lost DRS for a large chunk due to a software glitch.
That was fascinating, yeah. And I actually appreciated, to a certain extent, because Bottas was actually a really, really nice canary in a coal mine of sorts of what the racing would be like without DRS, because here he was, a clearly faster car, sometimes not able to make the pass at the end of the long straight.
Yeah, I mean, he had to make some moves at different points of the track, which I think was quite entertaining, but then I think he got up to the sort of faster midfield team, and then he was stuck. So he wasn't able to, you know, the third sector of that track is particularly non-conducive to passing, and it's a very odd circuit. The tracks that they built that don't facilitate passing, you know, it's just extraordinary. I was reading the other day that they've actually changed the track configuration when they're building in Vietnam to try and actually make it better for overtaking. It's amazing. How long have we been running at Abu Dhabi? 5-6 seasons now?
Yeah, they haven't. I think 2012 is what sounds right to me.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they haven't tried to do anything to promote, you know, a better track layout for certainly in the final sector to allow cars to follow each other more closely. But yeah, I mean, it sort of introduced better racing and then worse racing at the same time. It kind of showed that maybe we have to wait till 21 before we can start to wean ourselves off DRS as a artificial measure to facilitate overtaking in this crop of F1 cars. It was a good midfield battle, though. I mean, Bottas, obviously, as we've seen all season, if you're in one of the top three teams' cars, you can pretty much, no matter where you start from, get back into the top six. But the midfield battle was interesting, watching the McLarens battle the Renaults, and then with Force India getting in the mix under in the hands of Sergio Perez, who actually won that battle in the end, with a fine pass on Norris on the last lap.
Yeah, I agree. And also, the very first Grand Prix of Abu Dhabi was 2009. So, it's been a decade.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have guessed that. I mean, it's an interesting venue. It looks very pretty, but, you know, ultimately, is it giving us the sort of racing that we want? I think that you have to go back to the classic tracks to really get that.
Well, you know, it's more of a spectacle, set up to be a race in the dusk into the night. It's got the Ferrari world. You know, it's got a lot of the 21st century glitz, but it does not have the classic racing, the classic pucker factor moments that you look for. I mean, it's no Spa, clearly.
No, absolutely not. I mean, Ferrari were dire in the race. I mean, so if they carry the end of this season's performance into next year, it's going to be a Mercedes fest again. But I think there's reasons to be cheerful for those people who don't want to see Mercedes and Lewis win again. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, Bottas won four races. Red Bull and Ferrari both won three each. Charles got the pole position title for the season, right? So 7 poles to him, 1 to his teammate, which says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
7-1 is extraordinary.
Yeah.
you know, it's so I think we can all look forward to 2020. It's interesting that they've decided to stick with the same compound tyres for next season. They were looking at a different compound, but apparently there was...
That was thoroughly shut down after a test.
The tyres felt weird, apparently, so that's been knocked on the head.
Hey, to drink number two. Cheers again.
Oh, yeah.
Let's
cheers.
Keep this going. So, based on what you saw at the end of 2019, what do you think about McLaren making another step, not to being one of the top teams, but to start challenging for more podiums more often? And what about the factory Renault team?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see. You would expect the top three teams maybe to bunch up a little bit more and to fight for the wins between them. So Mercedes, Ferrari and Red Bull, I think, are going to be out on their own. Hopefully the gap to the midfield will close a little bit. And that's probably going to be led by McLaren, I would think. I don't see Renault challenging them. They're swinging the axe. There's been a few big names depart recently. Nick Chester, I think, has just been axed as their tech chief, for example. So it's going to be another year of rebuilding at Renault.
Well, and I think Renault has kind of been saying for a while that they're really looking for 2021 with the updated regulations to be a part where they can really close the gap to the top teams. But they seem to be questioning if that's the case because Renault is giving them much less of a budget to work with compared to Mercedes and Ferrari. That's their claim.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they've been spending an awful lot of money, Renault. And I think really they expected after last season finishing fourth, you know, the claims by Cyril was that they would be closing up to the top three, you know, maybe not catching them, but getting a lot closer. And I think in terms of outright pace, they've done that a little bit, but then they've been overtaken by McLaren using exactly the same powertrain. So it's not been a good year for them. I am a little bit sad to see Hülkenberg go, honestly. I did like him. You know, it's amazing. He had a good run at Renault, one season being, you know, narrowly shaded by your driver, and that's his F1 career done. It's extraordinary. It's such a cutthroat business, really.
And he's, you know, he is, I think, 32, 33 now. Yeah. He's far from too old. And the reports came out that it wasn't his performance as much as his attitude, which I think is easy to say of someone that's departing, because that kind of softens the blow a bit. It's like, no, we're not hampering on his performance. He had a crummy attitude, which I think is a bit of an unfortunate thing. It certainly doesn't soften the blow for Hülkenberg to be told that he had a poor attitude. And, hey, good luck finding a ride. And Hülkenberg himself has said he has no interest in IndyCar, which is a shame. But he has zero interest in ovals. But was there anything about Abu Dhabi specifically that stood out?
I mean, I like the end of race donuts. It's always fun. But no, I mean, it wasn't a thriller. You know, I think it just cemented the final placings in the championship, right? We saw McLaren and Renault finish third, fourth and fifth, I beg your pardon, and then STR took sixth ahead of Racing Point, Alfa Romeo, Haas and Williams. So the minor placings were, I mean, from a driver's championship point of view, Carlos clinched best of the rest, didn't he?
Yeah, well, and Carlos, with the help of that podium that he had at Brazil, that was granted to him a few days later.
Yeah, but Gasly also benefited in Brazil, didn't he? And that's what...
Definitely so.
So, yeah, I mean, so they both finished ahead of Albon, who you know, was unlucky in Brazil not to finish second himself. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a thriller to end the season. I mean, it was interesting to me that Mercedes dominated it quite so convincingly after a season where they've really struggled, certainly after the summer break, to exert any real dominance. It was surprising to see them unchallenged. But, you know, we knew that the underlying car has always been pretty good at certain tracks, certain conditions.
And then, yeah. So, we kind of touched on Hülkenberg being out, and that kind of being a shame. Another person that's been in the news physically around at Abu Dhabi and been in the news quite a bit searching for rides is Fernando Alonso. And it sounds like he effectively has already dismissed any chance of being in the car in 2020, but was looking to be in the car in 2021. And it sounds like he's just burned so many bridges, there's no top team for him. McLaren's kind of saying, no, I don't think that's going to work out. Christian Horner seemed to be pretty blatant, saying, no, he's more damaging than he is helpful. He burned bridges at Ferrari. Where would he go other than Mercedes? And would Mercedes want someone like that?
Yeah, I mean, apparently Chase Carey is even trying to basically become an Alonso promoter and was, as you said, trying to find a seat for him at Red Bull because that's the obvious spot for him. He hasn't burnt any bridges at Red Bull in the past, but they don't, as you said, Christian doesn't seem interested. I mean, the big driver market shakeup is going to be at the end of next year, isn't it? And, you know, it's interesting that Max Verstappen's already saying that the pressure's on Red Bull to keep him for 21. If they're not competitive early next season, he's going to start looking for other possibilities, which can only mean Ferrari and Mercedes. So, I mean, most of the drivers are out of contract at the end of next year. So that's really Alonso's big chance to get back into the frame. But would you pick Fernando over Max?
Yeah. I mean, I think that kind of sums it up.
Or Charles or Lewis.
Right, exactly. And I think that Fernando will, he's not yet, but he'll be very close to 40. In for the 2021 season.
Yeah, but as you know yourself, 40 years of age is no barrier to ultimate speed, is it?
No, I was saying that as that was a plus.
Okay.
I was saying he's almost 40, but there's some other negatives to worry about. 40 is quite young yet. The thing I found fascinating is Alonso could potentially benefit if the silly season gets awfully silly between Hamilton and Verstappen. Because they're the two most talked about hottest commodities, blah, blah, blah. Hamilton has been driving a Mercedes-powered race car since he was 13. And it seems quite odd to me that he would all of a sudden say, oh, yeah, jump to Ferrari. How can you turn that down? It's like, well, you can turn that down because you've had so much success and such a long-standing relationship with such a big manufacturer.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I think he really wants to equal Schumacher. So if Mercedes give him a decent car next year, he'll have a shot at doing that. But the interesting stat is no driver since Fangio has actually won championships for three different constructors.
Hmm.
So, and, you know, Ferrari is the iconic team in Formula One, isn't it? And so there's a potential to cement his legacy by going to Ferrari and doing what Vettel couldn't, for example, and bringing them at least a driver's championship. I don't know. If I was a betting man, I think he'll stay at Mercedes. And the interesting thing is, his decision of whether or not to stay at Mercedes may be linked to what Toto Wolff does.
Yeah.
Because there was some discussion about him replacing Chase Carey.
Exactly right. Him becoming the new head of Liberty Media.
Right. But so that seems to have receded, that the possibility of Wolff replacing Carey. So if Wolff stays at Mercedes, I'd be surprised if Lewis also doesn't stay at Mercedes.
Yeah, and that was kind of openly discussed, that they have a close relationship, and I find that fascinating. What do you think about, even if Red Bull does perform, the temptations for Verstappen to still go to Mercedes or Ferrari? I feel like the pull of those two teams would still be pretty strong, even if Red Bull had a strong year.
I think, you know, Lewis is going to make the decision to stay at Mercedes or not. They're not going to push him out. And so if he stays at Mercedes, they wouldn't sign Max as his co-driver, I don't think. I think they would keep, they'd either promote Russell or someone like that, or they would keep Bottas as the second driver. So therefore, I really think Max's options would only really be Red Bull or Ferrari. And would Max really want to go up against Charles? I think if he knows that, you know, it's one thing to get frustrated about a team's performance, but if that team has been built around you, he's not going to throw that away in a heartbeat, right? So, you know, Ferrari could become Charles's team, and he's probably better off sticking with Red Bull, and because they, you know, they clearly love him, and they certainly seem to give him the best equipment and the best opportunity to be successful, judging by how many teammates he's gone through in the last couple of years. So,
but what do you think Yoss, the boss, would say about this? Do you think he would give that advice? I don't know. It's tempting, to the idea of Ferrari, even to his dad, might be a pretty tempting proposition.
He's got a long career. There's no need to rush into a Ferrari seat. Is there? I mean, Red Bull have a pretty good track record, even with a powertrain that's down on power. They were pretty decent this season. They still have Adrian Newey, one of the most prolific car designers of all time. I'd be leaving that team, under duress. I don't think I'd be leaping out of there unless it was on fire.
So we talked about how it's sad for Hülkenberg to go, but I am quite keen to see Ocon back in a racing suit.
Are you? I'm not. He was a disaster.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he just kept hitting Perez when they were at Force India together.
That was great.
No, I'm not excited about Ocon at all. I mean, let's see how he goes. But there's a lot of prospects that came into Formula One this year that I am excited about. I've always rated Carlos Sainz. Sainz went really well when he was teammate with Verstappen.
Totally agree.
And, you know, Lando Norris has fared pretty well against him this year in McLaren. And then you've got, I was excited by Albon's rise this season.
And Russell as well.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of talent out there. Ocon's got to, I guess, prove himself again this season. And, you know, Daniel Ricciardo is pretty handy, you know, so he's going to have his hands full, I think.
But I think that Ricciardo is quite handy and well known to be handy. So if Ocon holds his own against him, that'll be a very strong performance.
Well, you've got a French driver and a French team, so Daniel is going to have to be on his game, because I can see the politics there also being tricky. But, yeah, I mean, Ricciardo is quick. There's no doubt about that. Because Hulk had blown... I mean, Julian Palmer was blown out of the water, right? And yet, Ricciardo, very quickly... I mean, he struggled for the first, three, four races, and then quickly became...
Yeah, it was a braking issue. It was a braking feel he said wasn't right for him, and he had to get used to that.
Yeah, that's right. But once he did, he had the measure of Hülkenberg. So Ocon's going to be, I think... Well, it's going to be one of the fascinating things to watch next season as that plays out.
I mean, okay, but just to give her some perspective here, Ocon versus Gasly. I mean, I still think Ocon... I thought Gasly did quite all right. I mean, after all, Gasly has a second-place finish, let's not forget. But I thought Ocon...
You're a bottle of gin down, mate.
yes, but I'm a beer up. Okay. Ocon, I thought, was better than Gasly.
I mean, Gasly had a bizarre season, didn't he? I mean, it was a horror show in the Red Bull, and yet when he went back to STR, he had some great drives. I mean, he fluked into second place in Brazil, no doubt about that, but his pace was extraordinary. He was out and out the quickest midfield runner up until that point. So, you know, he was in the right place at the right time. He gave himself that opportunity to inherit the podium position.
Well, I think that's an incredibly important point. He gave himself that opportunity. That's how you get them. You keep yourself there to have them.
But if he'd been driving a Red Bull, I don't think he would have been in that position. I mean, honestly, that's the bizarre
the
thing about
it.
Yeah. I mean, he was just woefully slow in the Red Bull. And, you know, Albon hasn't really threatened Max consistently since he's been in the Red Bull, but he has at least been where that car should be. And Gasly couldn't do it. So I don't know. Gasly, Ocon, I think it depends on how settled they are in the cars they're driving and how much performance they can extract from it. I mean, it just goes to show the fine margins in this sport, doesn't it? I mean, you know, you don't feel comfortable and so you can't go to the limit and therefore you're being absolutely showed up. You're a second off the pace. And yet you're back into a happy environment. You like the car, you like your engineers, and all of a sudden you're doing great things in the car again. It's an interesting sport. It's not that straightforward.
I think it's going to be really fascinating in 2020 because there's already a fair amount of attention going towards 2021. And we're just 2 weeks off the back of 2019.
Yeah.
So how much, it seems like 2020 is going to have to be kind of a barn burner of a season to even get much attention, or are all eyes going to be on 21?
Well, I think if Mercedes turn up and start winning from the off, yeah, everyone will immediately focus on the season after. But I'd be surprised if that happens. I think Mercedes clearly have lost some performance in the powertrain side. They've been caught up or even passed, and that's led them, you know, to some pretty interesting situations. I mean, so they've got to find some powertrain performance over the winter. Ferrari have to find some operational improvements and some performance from their car. I guess they're going to go away from a low drag, higher downforce setup for next year. That's obviously going to take some time to develop. But I think next year we don't need to rush ahead. I mean, everyone's excited about 21 and the rule changes, but the reality is the bigger teams with the bigger resources will do a better job. So I don't expect that to really reshuffle the grid. And we should just, you know, I think the big talking point of next year is going to be, can Lewis exceed Schumacher's race, total number of race win record, and can he equal his championship record? That's really, you know, I never thought, we've talked about this before, I never thought anyone would get close to Schumacher's records. It's astonishing that Hamilton's now on the brink. He won 11 races this year, another season like that, and he'll be on his own. I mean, he could be the first driver to break 100 race wins.
That's an amazing.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
I mean, when I grew up, you know, 20, 30 race wins was a lot.
Well, I mean, you mentioned him yourself, but Fangio had 25.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the likes of Stewart, Clark. I mean, Prost, when Prost got into the 40s, that was shocking, right? But now it's just the whole game's moved on. I mean, even Vettel is in, what, still mid-50s? Yeah, I mean, so that's really where the focus is going to be. Just like a couple of seasons ago, was it who's going to be first to five, Vettel or Hamilton? Well, that got clearly decided in Hamilton's favour, so now is it can he equal the great Schumacher?
Yeah, I feel compelled to say this every time. We have to bear in mind ratios. When Fangio raced, there were less than 10 Grand Prix a season. Okay. I think the first year was 7, maybe 8. And then it slowly trickled up. You know, we were at 15, 16 Grand Prix in the 90s. Now we're getting into this 20, 21 race series. So as remarkable as each having those records are, it is important to bear in mind that there are more opportunities to break those records than there ever have been. And if you have a stronger car, it's easier to do it than it's ever been before, because reliability, like, you know, foundational reliability is so much better than it has ever happened. So, you know, I'm not trying to take away from Hamilton's records. His driving performance is really, really impressive. But I think it's always an important footnote to make is, bear in mind that because of the way the sport itself has progressed, these types of records are easy to go after than they ever have.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, my point is just, you know, Schumacher had moved the bar so high, it was hard to imagine anyone coming close to it.
And completely agree.
But, you know, I'm a huge Jim Clark fan, and if you look at the win percentage or the pole percentage, you know, Clark is right up there, as is people like Fangio. And, you know, Clark used to win or the Lotus used to break back in the day, right? So, yeah, you can't compare drivers from different eras very easily. And it's certainly not on the basis of total number of wins or pole positions. Absolutely.
favorite moment of 2019?
Well, I mean, my favorite moment of 2019 was probably seeing Lewis in Austin, actually. That was pretty cool. I mean, I hadn't been to an F1 race for a couple of seasons, and if you haven't been, or you haven't been in a while, I do recommend it. It's not cheap, but it's a lot of fun. So just watching F1 cars go through the 345 complex, you can't understand how quick these machines are until you see them cornering at those speeds. So that is the most memorable moment for me of the season.
It's ironic. In a lot of ways, my favorite moment was also at the USGP, meeting Robert Warner at the USGP, the person whose ticket was mailed to me. And a few emails and a few phone calls later, I ended up returning it to him along with a copy of Autoweek magazine sent to him, and got to know him a little bit. That was a great moment. But in terms of racing moments, I have to say, I'm looking forward to your facial expression. I think my favorite moment was Vettel's second place at Germany this season, because I thought, proven to be incorrect, I thought that was a turning point for Vettel and he was going to be back on form. But it slid away from him again.
I mean, the German Grand Prix was an extraordinary race. You know, there was so much action, and
it was also the 125th anniversary of Mercedes,
right?
And that was the one Grand Prix where they properly flubbed it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were a lot of highlights. I mean, I really enjoyed the Hungary battle between Max and Lewis. That was a pretty, you know, on a track that hasn't always given us great racing, that was a pretty cracking race.
And that was definitely the most exciting tire wear battle we'd ever seen.
But even on track, I mean, Lewis's attempt to pass Max at turn six? It was which forced him to, you know, Max took the normal line and Lewis had to take to the runoff. You know, they were willing to battle wheel to wheel as well as through pit stop strategy. So, that was a good one for me. But, I mean, it's been a good season. It's been an interesting season, I think. And, of course, Lewis won, so that always helps.
Well, one more time. Well, cheers to that.
Cheers.
Excuse me. And also, Honda engines were great. So,
in the Austrian Grand Prix with Max and Charles at the death, that was pretty cool. I mean, Charles learned a tough lesson in that particular race.
It turns out that Chris and I like racing.
Go figure.
But anyway, for the last time for the 2019 season, I want to thank you for listening. Please take a moment to review us on iTunes or on whatever platform you get our podcasts. In the background, you can hear Chris fumbling with his notes. Please leave comments on the episode of your choice by going to funwithcars.com. As always, I can be reached at feedback@funwithcars.com. Tweet us at fun_with_cars. And check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/FWCars. Okay, Chris, we did it.
Thanks for listening. Have a good Christmas.
I'm Robin Warner. Goodbye. All right.